Thank you, Louise. And I'd also like to extend my very warm welcome to you all. It's really lovely, in fact, a delight to be back here, and the sense of again, and the other sense of completely fresh, because there's a new day, a group of people, some of you I know, and some of you actually really quite well, and some of you I've not had the opportunity to meet with before, and it's actually really quite a privilege for me, it feels, to have the opportunity to come and share with you something that I really love and that I really have felt immense benefit from in my life, and that is the territory of meditation and say spiritual practice and teachings in the context of the insight meditation tradition. So part of my sense of being here is just taking a moment to look around, and you might like to do the same. You don't have to. You all get to look at me. I get to look at you. I think I get the better deal. But just to notice this gathering of humanity as it is, as we are. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. I was in a taxi last night coming from the train that was running something like an hour and 10 or 15 minutes late by the time it got into London, and talking to the taxi driver who was bringing me to the hotel, and we were talking about, you know, what was really important. I was actually enjoying the conversation. So someone who had some exposure to spiritual practice, mostly through the internet, but was exploring and curious about what was important for him in his life. And that's really what I assume is the underlying motivation or interest that brings each of us here in different ways and perhaps different particularities, but that we have a real interest and concern for the well-being of our life and really the well-being of the world and all of life. So there's really always for me a sort of a twin theme to any day retreat such as this. One is the theme of the day, which is the seven factors of awakening, and I'll speak about that over the day. But there's also really the theme of our meeting with, or the invitation to engage consciously with our life as it is right now, right here, which is always a part of and very much the fabric of what it means to engage in meditation practice, or to come to a retreat day, as we've done here. Louise mentioned that the day's in silence. That's not as a way of kind of shutting ourselves down or denying ourselves the capacity to connect and relate with each other, but because sometimes we need to simplify our experience in order to clarify it. In order to understand what's going on, it's useful if there aren't too many things going on. And so one of the things we can more easily, though it's not always easy, let go of, for instance, is that whole realm of interaction in that way. And yet, of course, ultimately, that and everything needs to be part of spiritual practice. There's someone wanting to come in. So for me, there's those, in a way, two themes. It's like there's the whole thing of being here on retreat, practicing meditation, having the opportunity to encounter our life in a way in which we're supported and encouraged by what's offered from myself, but equally by the presence of each other, to be supported and encouraged in this conscious engagement with what it means to be alive, with what it is that's important for us. And so, with the theme, the seven factors of awakening, it's very much in the context of a day of meditation, practice and retreat, and an opportunity to connect and experience or come closer to where we are in ourselves and our lives. And there'll be some opportunities for speaking with myself in various forms, and there's some small groups or some questions and answers, maybe different points in the day. So it's not that there'll be no opportunity for you to say anything, and obviously it won't actually be silent, because I'm going to be talking for starters, and there's going to be any number of other noises, so not to make that into any kind of problem. It's more like a containing of our engagement, or an orienting of our engagement towards what's happening in the most immediate sphere, which is this mind, heart, body, and what we might learn through that engagement. And the other real foundation for doing something like this together that to me is important, in fact I would say crucial, is that we have a basic attitude of care for ourselves, for each other. A basic intention to support the well-being, to not cause harm to others or ourselves. And although that we could probably take for granted, this isn't really what I imagine one would come and do for a day if that was your basic plan for the day, is I want to go out and cause harm, I'll go and meditate, you know. But there's something that, for me, that's important about naming that. Actually to honour it, to make it fully conscious. And perhaps also to imagine the fact, or the possibility that this is something that we are all sharing in together. We create together. And that it applies to all the beings we encounter here, not just the human beings, but the sense of caring for life. And little creatures who make this field their home. Or this, not this field, but that field. Little creatures that make this room their home. When we encounter them, we sometimes think, you know, they shouldn't be here, but they may have similar feelings about us. And, you know, they haven't wiped away our web or anything, whereas we might for them. So just, for me, there's always something important about it, just that sensitivity to the tenderness of life that we all are part of. Sensitivity to the vulnerability of the human condition and the condition of anything that's living, which is that we're subject to, you know, things that aren't always easy for us. And that there's the possibility to learn to live in this world as it is, in a way in which we can really deeply know a sense of well-being, of peace, inner peace, and freedom. And so the teaching that I want to focus on today, the teaching of the seven factors of awakening, Bojanga, it's called, or that's the approximate pronunciation of the Pali word. Pali's the language that the Buddha's teachings were initially recorded in. And the teaching and practice tradition of insight meditation is quite clearly and directly founded in those teachings. And so that's a sort of a context, a broader context for insight meditation that many of you will be aware of, but maybe not all of you. It doesn't require that you sign up in any way to Buddhism or become a Buddhist in order to practice. In fact, quite the opposite. It's actually quite healthy to not become a Buddhist because it's just something else you have to let go of in the end. But to have a real respect and appreciation for the Buddha's teaching, of course, that's something else, and I have an immense amount of that. Did we turn that on? You did, good. I usually am supposed to say, let's turn it on now. I just suddenly wasn't sure if I had. No, it's fine. It's good, I'm glad it was. Thank you. So the seven factors of awakening are a particular way of unpacking the Buddha's teaching and applying it. And so just stepping back from that a moment to relate to maybe what brings us here, what interests us to come for the first time. Maybe just to see, well, what's all this about? I've heard about meditation, or I've heard about Buddhism. You know, let's see if there's anything in it for me, or it's real or relevant to me. So there's that. And then there's the sense for people who've, you know, practiced it perhaps quite a lot and really have a sense that this is something central or fundamental that I want to incorporate more and more fully into my life. And what's at the heart of what the Buddha taught, what's at the heart of meditation from my experience and understanding, is really that it's a vehicle for transformation, for transforming our experience of life. Not necessarily for transforming the experiences we have in life, but for transforming how it is that we actually are affected by, or touched by, or able to engage with life. And the Buddha speaks in his teaching, and again and again he refers to the possibility of what he calls, or what has been translated and described in various ways, but in shorthand we can talk about awakening. Awakening. Or liberation. And this refers to our inherent potential as human beings, of which we all partake, the capacity to realize, to understand for ourselves in our own experience how it is that we become entangled with our lives or with others, with situations, and how it is we can, in fact, free ourselves from that entanglement, how it is we can be in the world in a way in which neither it nor we are somehow a problem. Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be challenges or struggles. The Buddha's life, if you read his story, involved plenty of challenges both before and after his awakening. But I think for me, what I want to really invite you to contemplate as we begin this day is to what extent you might have any sense of that possibility as being something immediately relevant to yourself. Because it's really easy to think about, oh, that's for those kind of really serious and slightly nutty practitioners who do nothing but this, all, you know, live in caves and shave their heads and, you know, wear brown robes. You know, that we kind of feel like a somebody other or else than kind of like us. Or we think, well, yeah, maybe one day in a few hundred thousand lifetimes, maybe then that might be something relevant to my life. For now, I just like to feel a little bit less discomfort and confusion and be a little bit more able to be mindful. That would be, you know, great. And, of course, that would be great. But there's something really important in our vision of the Dharma teaching and practice as a potentiality for liberation. And the teaching of the seven factors of awakening is basically pointing to the qualities that are necessary to bring to fruition and harmony in order for the heart and mind to realize the liberation that is possible for it. And these are qualities that are already present within us, but not yet necessarily fully recognized or developed. And so the process of meditation, we could say the whole journey of spiritual practice, could be understood or described, and there are many ways it could be understood and described, but one way that's perfectly valid would be to say it is the development and cultivation to full maturity and bringing into harmony of these seven qualities. And the qualities are mindfulness, or capacity to pay wholehearted, a sort of a fully collected and coherent attention to what's happening in a way that allows us to see with some depth and penetration into what's taking place. Investigation of the way things are, second quality. The capacity we have to actually, by looking at things, by paying attention to them, to start to comprehend what's going on, to understand how it is that things work and what are the principles and the processes that are playing out in our lives, in our bodies, in our minds, in our world, and start to understand what's going on. There is also the capacity to apply ourselves, to engage. This is something that requires us to engage. It doesn't just happen if we think, well, that's a nice idea. Anyone who's tried meditation thinking, well, sounds like a good idea, let's see if it happens, we'll realize that it requires something a little more than that. We actually have to engage. We have to bring ourselves, bring energy, bring, sometimes the word used is effort. It's not always that helpful for Westerners. Effort often connotes a sense of striving and willful forcing. And something more useful, I think, is like a wholehearted intentional engagement with that requires energy. So this is the third factor. The fourth factor is actually joy, enjoyment, a sense of uplifted, appreciative quality that comes when we're really wholehearted with something, whatever it is, when we really engage with it, we start to enjoy it. even if to begin with we didn't think we were going to, and have some really mundane job we have to do, if we really engage with it. I have to help my neighbour move three massive concrete posts that we just got out of my garden. And he wanted them, he had a use for them, I didn't, and they probably weighed 3/4 of a ton each. And it was like, it's not what I kind of looked forward to doing. But somehow we got into it. He had a little trolley, we got it on the trolley, we pushed around and up a ramp, and we were, by the time we got to the third one, we were sprinting with that thing. And it was so much fun. And when you think about it, well, that's not going to be fun, having to move these really heavy, ugly, things. But we were committed and wholehearted. And so there's this quality of joyfulness, of uplift, of enjoyment that can come to even mundane things that's really important in the development of the heart and the liberation of the heart. It brings a sort of an enthusiasm to our life. The next of the factors is calm or tranquility. The capacity to, as we find a sense of joy and well-being in just the simple encounter with our life, rather than trying to or needing or believing we have to organise it a particular way. I'll say more about this, but I'm just kind of laying this out simply to begin with. The idea that actually well-being and happiness is available to us right here and now, irrespective of, or in some ways, in spite of what's going on. What happens when we start to see that is the whole struggle with experience, to try and make it a certain way, to fix it, to stop it, to change it, starts to calm and cool down. And actually what we start to experience is a sense of inner calm or tranquility. It's like, things aren't always perfect, I'm not suggesting that at all, but there's a way this can all be met and handled and understood that makes it much more fluid and less a sense of something fractured or conflicted. And as we come, is that sense of just realizing that what we're looking for is right here. We don't have to go somewhere else for it. It's right here, what we're looking for. As we start to feel it, and then there is a calming, because it's like so much agitation is the thought that what's here I have to get rid of, or what's not here I have to get hold of, or keep once I've got it. When that starts to calm down, it's like the mind naturally settles and focuses. And as the mind focuses, the next of the qualities, concentration, a sense of gatheredness or collectedness. Concentration is not always a good word, because again, we sort of often have the sense of forcing or striving with it. More useful is a sense, I think, that a gatheredness or a unification of the mind, where it's no longer going here, going there, going up, going down, going backwards, forwards, sideways, and all at the same time. It's just here, with just this. And in that, there's both a sense of well-being that comes with it. That's often one of the things we notice in meditation practice, and we think, I got it, and then we spend a lot of time trying to get it again. That sense of well-being that comes with the mind settling, quietening, stabilizing. But it also gives the capacity to see more clearly and deeply. It's like that focusing of the mind, or gathering of the mind, it's like putting a focusing lens onto a light source, a source of luminosity that's mostly just scattered and dissipated. And when you concentrate, or when you focus it, suddenly it becomes remarkably penetrative. And we can see what's going on. We can see what we might be unconsciously enacting that's not contributing to our happiness or well-being or the welfare of the world. And actually, whereas we have a choice. We don't have to. And within that, then, there's a certain empowerment that happens for us, not to manipulate the world, but an empowerment to us that we can actually determine at quite a fundamental level the qualitative element of our life. We can choose that which supports it. We can't control what happens to us. We don't know what's going to happen to us, actually. We can't know, but we can learn how to meet it. And what that brings is the seventh factor of enlightenment, is the quality of equanimity. a sense of, okay, you sometimes things might be really tough. Sometimes they might be really lovely. Sometimes they might be just completely boring. And I'm not just talking about meditation here. You know, this is our life. It tends to move in those different planes of that which we find lovely, that which we find difficult, and that which we don't really care too much, you know, don't have any real engagement or interest in as an instinctive response. That there starts to become a sense of, okay, this is a process playing out that has a certain lawfulness to it, that when I understand the mechanism of that, I can be in alignment with it, rather than feeling like I'm getting run over by it all the time, or banging my head against the brick wall of the way things are. And there's that equanimity, this quality of, not that saying that it's always calm and easy, but that, there's a deeper sense of ground or of rootedness that comes. And when all these factors develop and mature, just as when there are no clouds in the sky, the sun pours forth. It's not that something gets done to make it happen, it's just the natural consequence. If there's no clouds in the sky, unless it's nighttime, so there's no planet in the way, we either get clouds in the way or the planet gets in the way. And then the sun is just there. And of course, the sun's been shining all the time. Just we happen to be located at a particular position where we couldn't see it. So too, awakening. The conditions are there. The qualities, the factors, and the very specific direct teaching of the Buddha. These seven factors, when present, mature, and balanced, so it's not predominantly one or the other, but they're all there, awakening is the outcome of that. And it's something beautiful, something I think very uplifting and precious to hear, that sense of, particularly if we can start to notice, and this is one of the things we would do today, that all of those qualities, maybe not all of the time or as fully as we might wish, but they're all accessible to us. We probably know them all in some ways, and we might know them by wishing we had more of them, but we still know them. So that's, in a way, a little body of more theoretical material, we could say, kind of setting a little framework for the seven factors of awakening, which I'll speak about more. The other side of the day, as I said, is the engagement with meditative practice. Now, these aren't really different topics, but in a certain way it's useful to speak about them differently or at different times. In the practice of meditation, one is learning initially to bring that quality of mindfulness to the fore, to connect with and develop that as a way of being consciously in contact with what's going on and begin to see more clearly and deeply into the nature and the process of experience, to understand it. So we're not just meditating to have a calm or pleasant or peaceful experience. If we were doing that, there are other things we could do that would be more effective, you know, armchairs in the sun, for instance. If we just wanted to experience pleasant sensations, body work, or I don't know what does it for you, you know, ice cream maybe. That's not what this is ultimately about. It's maybe a disappointment if you came along hoping that's what it was. Sometimes we confuse pleasant sensations with well-being and happiness. Because sometimes they actually come together, so that's understandable. But they are not the same thing. Sometimes we also confuse unpleasant sensations or painful, difficult things with unhappiness. And they are also not the same thing, though they do sometimes come together. So in terms of meditation, we engage with it primarily and initially with the first factor of awakening, of mindfulness. Mindfulness is said to be the factor which both reveals and develops all the others. So it's kind of magical. It's, you know, in terms of what's been extracted as the core teachings from the Buddha in this tradition that we call insight meditation, that's part of what's happening here. It's very interesting how that particular thing has been extracted out of this kind of more overtly spiritual context into a much more clearly, in a way, secular context, mindfulness practice, and made into something very potent and useful and beneficial and accessible in places where, you know, this wouldn't be. so wonderful. And it's the key. It's the key. It's not the whole thing, but it's the key. And in a certain way, it carries everything within it. There's something holographic about truth and about Dharma, in that each of the pieces actually have within them all the others in the end. But sometimes we need to understand how that works and how to bring that out. So meditation practice, start with mindfulness, which means we start with tuning in to where we are, to what's actually happening. And what's useful to do that is to begin with our body, because our body's right here. It's nowhere else and never was anywhere else other than here and now. Our mind goes anywhere, pretty much any time, whenever it feels like, and not necessarily according to what we would prefer. And so it's a kind of a unreliable basis, at least initially, to try and ground ourselves. Though it tends to be where we can easily find ourselves living much of our life. So there's a shift, a reorientation that's invited. Okay, this body. So we sit it down here, got sense of feeling on the earth, and we notice what's happening. Feeling of this body. I feel the texture, the solidity, the warmth, coolness, hardness, softness, energy or lack of it in this physical body. It's expressed as a sense of posture, sense of uprightness, sense of maybe relaxation, sense of weightiness on the earth. And then what else is happening is we're breathing. It's the basic thing happening when we're sitting that's keeping us alive. So we use that. We can use that as a vehicle for mindfulness. That doesn't mean that the mindfulness practice or the meditation practice is all about the body or the breathing. It's more like that's a vehicle for cultivating this quality. It's about the quality. That's what we're interested in. And so just take a moment to notice what it's like to bring your attention into your body. Some of your attention, hopefully, has been to me in the last little while. Not all of it. It doesn't need to be all over here. You can actually interestingly feel our body. Try this, actually. Notice if you can feel your body, and whether when you really feel your body sitting there, somehow, notice if that in any way affects your ability to hear what I'm saying and understand it. Now, we don't actually need to leave that sense of contact with an immediacy of physical presence, the mindfulness of body, we could say, in order to engage or comprehend what's going on around us. In fact, interestingly, it helps us to engage with and to comprehend what's going on around. So it's not a removal of ourselves from or a disconnection in any way from life. It's actually creating a foundation in which we can more fully meet and receive it. So for those of you who are relatively new to meditation, my suggestion would be to follow the guidelines I'm just going to briefly offer, and we'll have a period of sitting meditation. For those of you who are relatively experienced and have probably heard me and any number of other people say much the same thing quite a few times, shall we say, you're welcome to do that. But what you can also do is just start to notice, of those seven qualities that I've mentioned, whether you notice their presence or absence, just noticing, oh, there's a bit of mindfulness. It has to be for you to notice. Oh, I wonder what else there is. Oh, that's investigation. Interesting. Okay, so that's there. That question engages the first two straight away. You have to be present to notice. You have to be interested in looking to see. And making no judgment at all of whether it's good or bad or enough or not enough of anything you notice. Just notice. Oh, there's a moment of calm. Or, wow, that was really a moment in which I wasn't calm. Just as important to notice that. For those of you doing this the first time, that's way too much to try and do. Don't. Just blank that last bit out of the suggestions and just stay with something more simple, which I'll give. But we've been sitting here for half an hour. We're going to be sitting here for a little while longer. So for those who wish, I'd just like to invite you to stand up. You don't have to.